Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Are you still speaking to us from South Florida, or have you wandered up to the Jersey Shore?
I am indeed. I like the Jersey Shore, even in the winter. I grew up in a town, Atlantic City, Margate, where it was dead in the winter, but you had the whole island to yourself, and I enjoyed the desolation. So it's nice, but it's sunny and beautiful down here in Florida, and that's not so bad either.
Hmm. So the latest jobs report in the U.S., 500,000 jobs created when they didn't expect much to happen. We had the same thing happen in Canada. They thought 35,000 jobs, and we get tens of thousands more. Is this giving us an accurate picture of what's happening out in the real world, not the world that the Fed and the Bank of Canada talk about?
Ha ha. You know, the statistics are absolutely rubbish. They're rubbish. They're meaningless. Even if they meant something, nobody could really say what they mean for the economy. You know, first, when you hear that word, you know, fewer jobs were expected, you wonder who the bozos are who were doing the expecting. You know, they get it wrong so much of the time that they're probably in the same league with the weatherman. But so who's doing the expecting, number one? And, you know, why are the earnings always above or below expectations? And you have these spectacular moves in stocks that are based on, they missed the analyst number by 3 cents or whatever. It's just a lot of, it's a circus, really. It doesn't mean anything. And, even the analysts who do some of the estimating are just giving the companies cover, or giving investors cover for buying whichever stock. So the jobs numbers mean nothing. There have been a lot of kind of high-powered jobs lost in Silicon Valley. Just go to Twitter and see what's happened there. Twitter just sort of inadvertently discovered that this company that had many, many thousands of employees could actually run pretty well with maybe 20 employees. And I guess Musk found that out too. He may not have known it when he bought the company, but of course you could lay everybody off there and Twitter would run just fine. It's just a website and some servers. So the job growth, of course, is just replacement. It's people coming back to work after COVID. There are a lot of waitresses. And as I mentioned in the recent commentary, you've got your cruise line saxophonist. These are jobs that are just, it's not an economy that's growing. It's an economy where some people are coming back to work.
I was going to say one of my best friends from high school was an entertainer on the cruise lines. He used to do quartets, but of course he gets all the money as the booker as well. So he said, now we're only a trio. But he says it's great. Every 2 weeks he gets to see something new and meet interesting people, as he says.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in other words, women. So apart from these jobs then, what's the economic outlook? Also, we keep hearing the Fed's not happy that jobs are still being created, that we don't have massive unemployment yet, and how important is massive unemployment in the fight against inflation. Why do they only use that one measurement?
Well, they use whatever seems to work best, you know, but none of it means anything. And if you sort of back up, take a couple steps back and look at what the Fed's doing. They're a fraud too, really. I mean, how could the economy is so dominated by consumption and finance in large part through credit that, of course, the Fed gets all the credit for reviving the economy. But why should we need credit stimulus to revive an economy at all? And of course, when you do that, it's at the expense of creating debt. So everybody's maxed out. I think we've got $900 billion on our credit cards now or something like that. And it's nothing to brag about, really.
Well, the credit card companies do like it. And they've always had super high interest rates. And since the Fed and the Bank of Canada have been bumping up rates, that gives them an excuse to charge you even more.
Yeah, and I guess it's mainly through credit cards that we have the illusion of prosperity in this country. It's possible to, you know, we have all kinds of sensational things. Everybody, pretty much everybody, even in the dumpiest neighborhoods, they all have 60-inch flat-screen televisions, and you move up a couple pegs, everybody's got a golf club, a driver that can hit the ball an extra 30 yards. And we've got great stuff. Mm. You know, all the catalogs are filled with things that we crave. But in the meantime, the things that really matter, with respect to your standard of living, they have all fallen off the edge of the earth. You know, in every area of our lives, really. And I think the most important area is the loss of the stay-at-home mom. You know, they're all in the workforce, and it was the women joining the workforce was sold as an advancement for feminism, but it's really a loss for everybody. You know, the kids have largely been underparented while this has happened, and so that's a very important piece of the standard of living that has just collapsed. And correspondingly, and you know, just try to find a clerk in a store or try to get a human being on the phone to talk to. There's no support for anything. That's customer support has actually, there it doesn't exist anymore. You know, I've had problems with Vonage, and I'm very good at finding out how to get to a human being, but Vonage doesn't talk. It doesn't let you talk to humans. It gives on 10,000 different web pages. If you're trying to find a way to reach them, it gives the same number. But if you press the support number, forget it. You know, they dead end you. They say, we'll send you, we don't have live support now. I guess they use the word now to imply that maybe someday in the future they'll have live. So they say, would you like us to send, chat support is available. Would you like us to send you a link to chat support? And if you say no, it asks you again, and it keeps asking you and asking you. So in order for me to get a human being on the phone yesterday at Vonage for a problem that I had, I had to press number one option for sales, and then I had to hit another thing that said I employ more than 10 people, and so that allowed me to reach a surly woman who said, well, this isn't my, you're in the wrong department. And I said, I know I am, but I thought maybe you could transfer me, or I could get some idea how to talk to a human, which I finally did. So I'm talking to a support person at Vonage, and I ask him, how could I have reached you directly? And even he didn't know. I said, you're sitting there in a job. They call you a support, you know, customer support rep or whatever, and you don't even know how you can be reached. He said, no, he really didn't. I'm saying, well, who calls you? How do they reach you? You know, you're sitting there. I'm sure the phone rings now and then, but maybe it was just all people like me who tricked Vonage by coming through the sales route. But this is all over. You can't find a person to help you, no matter who you're doing business with. And there are just a couple of companies, they happen to be taking over the world, like Amazon, where you actually can reach a human being. So we've lost customer support. We've lost stay-at-home moms. Doctors don't make house calls. The schools stink. So everything's going down the toilet, but nobody seems to notice because we've got these 60-inch, you know, flat-screen televisions on every wall. Mm.
Well, the difference in culture here is try to ditch as much work as possible. And I was watching a documentary about South Korea where every kid after school goes to a special school their parents pay for, and they go to school on Saturdays as well because, you know, it's a high-tech world. And if you're going to survive, you better understand how computers work and be part of that world.
Right, exactly. And I mean, everybody, the Americans know that. You know, our kids, even when they're in college, they want to major in art history. And you compare them to some South Korean who's on the track for a job in particle physics, you know that we're going to be dependent on South Korean brain power at some point.
Rick, so our economy again, the stock market, people are saying we may hit new highs, but we may have a crash. Is this one of the most difficult markets you've ever seen to try to get a handle on?
No, it's not. It's, no? All markets are difficult. And over the 40, 50 years that I've traded, most particularly on the exchange floor in San Francisco, I can't say that I've ever experienced a period where everybody was saying, boy, it's really easy trading these days. You know, it's just like shooting fish in a barrel, making money trading. So when people say this is a challenging environment for trading, there's never been an environment that was not challenging. So, you know, I don't see anything particularly interesting going on.
About 2 years ago, the Robin Hooders were doing okay because everything was going up and they all patted themselves on the back. I don't need to know anything about investment. I'm a Robin Hooder. I just click on these three things and I'm making money. And apparently about 95% of those people have crashed and burned.
Yeah, that's right. We haven't heard much about the Robin Hooders, but they were a phenomenon that was sort of cooked up by the news media that's too lazy to get the real story on anything. So here's something that sort of percolates point of visibility, and it gets written about in a way that completely misunderstands what these guys are doing and what their prospects for success in the long run are.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what's going on with the U.S. dollar?
Well, it's certainly not going away that I had expected a long time ago. You know, I've been bullish on the dollar more or less forever because I'm a hardcore deflationist. I think that all of the unpayable debt that we piled up can only be paid through a deflation. I don't see a hyperinflationary option, and I don't even think it can happen accidentally. We've talked about that before. You know, it's hyperinflation. Everybody agrees there's too much debt to pay. It will never be able to pay it off. So it's implied that it's going to have to be liquidated in some way so we can start over. And there are only two ways that can discharge debt in the amounts that we have. And one is hyperinflation and the other is a ruinous debt deflation. And everybody has the wrong idea about inflation. The inflationistas think, well, it's being driven by wage pressure right now, but that's a lot of crap. I mean, the trend can only go so far, and it butts up against, for one, the countervailing pressure of debt and people spending more than they have. But we see that the Fed has always been very successful at inflating real estate and financial assets. You know, they can pump up the stock market, no problem. And, of course, that's what we've had over the last decade, over the last 50 years, I should say. But they're going to be a lot less successful when they attempt to inflate certain other things that are headed into collapse. And you and I have talked about the pension system. You can sort of narrow it down to just one good example, the state of Illinois. Illinois is pretty much guaranteed to be the first state pension system that goes belly up. And And that's very deflationary. It's a bankrupt state pension fund. So if the Fed were to try to monetize that, you know, and whenever, you know, someone says, well, the government will come to the rescue, you need to substitute the word taxpayer for government. So that means you and I will come to the rescue of the state of Illinois. And so for the Fed to inflate its way out of that, they would actually have to send checks to hundreds of thousands of Illinois retirees, you know, who work for state, county, local government, whatever. And that's real money. That's not Fed bogus money that inflates stocks. It's the real deal. And it's checks that have to keep going out every month. And of course, you know, it's not going to stop with Illinois, California and Connecticut and 20 other states that are almost as in as bad a shape as Illinois will be there with their hands stretched out. You know, how about ours? So the minute the taxpayers come in to bail out, you couldn't even consider that, really. You could, because if we're on the hook to send pension checks to employees in 20 different states, that would be a hyperinflation. You know, just printing money that would be spent on real things, not in this bogus, you know, masturbatory exercise of stock market, you know, bull market shenanigans. So that means really that that these checks, if the Illinois employee gets a check for $1,700 every month, let's say, mid-level employee, then he's going to be able to probably buy one cart of groceries with that $1,700 after 20 states come in on this, you know, retirees in 20 states come in on the same deal. So that's a non-starter, really, trying to hyperinflate your way, or trying to inflate your way out of a collapse in the pension system, which is coming. But it's hugely larger than that, because the same thing applies in much bigger numbers to the Social Security system and, you know, Medicare. So all the politicians holding fast, we're never going to cut Social Security, but I can tell you that the benefits I'm collecting from Social Security and Medicare, that they're never, it's going to bankrupt the country. I know too many baby boomers who are really enjoying the benefits of Medicare, but you got to consider who's paying for it. It's these, you know, these people that, kids who have formerly had great jobs at Twitter.
And, also, why weren't these pension funds, funded adequately when the person was still working? Why weren't they forced to contribute more? Because I know a lot of things, if you're a police officer or armed forces, after 20 years, you get to have a full meal deal retirement with full benefits. And yet you still have half of your active working life left ahead of you.
Right. Not bad. And that in the bigger picture, you know, that's where we are. We're supporting, you know, people with private sector jobs or work until they're 70. To support, you know, payouts to, public sector jobs that, with employees who retired when they were 55 at 90% of their peak take home pay. And of course, even that was, there was a lot of trickery. And, I know teachers who do certain things to manipulate their income, as high as they can for those last few years that they teach. And, it comes back to them in pension plan dollars. You know, Chris Christie, of all people, was the first guy to really scream, you know, and he said the teacher's pension fund's going to bankrupt New Jersey, and it will. I mean, I know good friends of mine, they're both retired high school administrators, and they do well. They live so well that if you were to try to live as well as they do, off interest on your nest egg and somewhat depleting your nest egg in the process, drawing it down, you'd need $3 or $4 million in the bank to do that. They don't need anything because that check comes every month. But I can tell you that the level of support that they get from still working stiffs in the private sector who work till they're 80, it just can't keep on like it is.
Yeah, I have friends who've worked for three different police forces and have retired with full salaries from three police forces as their pension.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Nice deal. Yeah, I mean, most jobs people don't shoot at you either. Nowadays, isn't true, is it?
No.
Yeah, you can get shot anywhere.
I have a friend who is a high school gym teacher, and his package, his retirement package, is worth about $90K. And he's been retired since he was, I think, 62. So that's 11 years ago. So that's unsustainable, really. And, so at the political level, if you start bailing out these systems that are going to collapse, such as Illinois, the ones who are laying out all that money, the taxpayers, are going to scream bloody murder. So, our days are limited, and that's really true for the marvelous benefits that I'm getting right now from Social Security and Medicare.
Rick, what's happening with gold and silver?
It's gold is just kind of marking time. I would say yes, it is in a bull market, but it can range trade you to death, which it's doing. Gold has been in a downtrend for a bit. We had a nice bottom in October and a great rally, but we've had the COMEX gold has come down from about $1,970 an ounce to a current 1847. It's a little painful, but gold is marking time, I think, till something really goes wrong, and we're not quite there. We're in an economy that is muddling along on delusions and fumes, but it's not perceived really as being in some imminent state of collapse. But when all hell breaks loose, then that'll be gold's day.
Lithium, is it going to pick up?
Well, I have shares in a company called Frontier Lithium. This was something that my friend Chris Temple was very keen on, and it's traded between $3 and down around $1 in last year, and I just wrote it all the way down to the bottom, and Chris still says, don't worry, it's a $20 stock, currently trading $2.18, and I've taken some money out of it. I actually bought it around 69 cents and sold some of it for four times that. So just to judge from this one stock, lithium still has a future, although, as I understand it, they're going to be replacing a lot of lithium ion batteries with sodium batteries. And I'm no scientist. I know that when we had a look at sodium in the high school physics lab or chemistry class, they dropped some of it into water and it made quite an explosion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how that's all going to work. But lithium, I think it's got a future.
Anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
If you look too closely at the market, you're just going to get, you're going to get, it's like spun around three times. And, I really do think we're in a bear rally right now, but the problem is everybody thinks that. And even though everybody can ultimately be right, the market will take you a lot higher on that skepticism than you might imagine. So to tune out the numbers and the idea, all the bunk about, they're still saying we may avoid recession when we're actually in one. And I know they're reporting growth above 3% now, but it's all bogus. So just don't be fooled and just keep your ammo dry. Not to buy stocks, but just to buy groceries.
The Bank of Canada says we won't have any economic growth for the next 9 months. Are they finally being honest with us?
Yeah, and it's amazing. Once they come out with a confession like that, you'd be surprised at how that puts investors' troubled minds at ease, and then they start buying stocks again, even though the Canadian projection is not exactly sunny. They're talking about 9 months, and you can imagine. And when they say 9 months, reality is probably closer to 18 months.
Sure. What about that temporary inflation?
Right. It's getting pounded down now in a hard way. The used car prices have come down quite a bit. And, but the new ones, a good story in the journal about how, cars are getting into the same range as houses. You'll never really be able to afford a good one, or you'll never own a nice home. You'll only be making payments on it. So that's where we are. And I guess the whole leasing concept is what has kept that economy alive. And it's really given, it's a big deal, really, because so many people drive more car than they can afford, and it's really because of leasing. But it's yet one more bag of hot air inflation that's remaining to be deflated.
You know, I wonder how well you might do in a market if you made a basic car or basic pickup. No computerized stuff, except for the engine, which, you know, for pollution controls. But I don't need to have all these little computerized email. I just want a car that gets me from A to B. It has a heater or air conditioner so I don't overheat or freeze to death. And apart from that, would that give me an affordable car? Because it seems to me you're paying two-thirds of the prices for the fanciest computer on earth.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that's great. Just don't get in a collision with a Chevy Suburban.
Oh, well, I know. I always thought I'd wanted an armored car for a vehicle. I said, it doesn't matter what hits me. I live.
Well, if there's if you want to hold your own on a road with the behemoths that are out there, just you can get a 57 Chrysler LeBaron, you know. that's the closest you can come, really, in the used market to an Abrams tank.
Yes, our family car used to be a 52 Chevy four-door deluxe sedan, and there were some dents in it. You couldn't pull them out because the sheet metal was so thick.
Right. You know, you used to be able to sit on the hood of a car.
Yeah.
And that was okay. There was real metal. There was thickness there. But now you even lean up against it, and you've got a dent. It's the cars, and we're slowly sort of even down. We're making them more and more out of plastic, I guess, although carbon fiber is something else.
Henry Ford made a car out of corn oil plastic back in the 30s to prove it could be done. But, of course, back then, sheet metal was so much cheaper than corn oil.
Huh. That's interesting. So it didn't melt on hot days?
I don't know. But he just said, look, it won't rust, so there's no market in that for the car companies. We need rusty cars.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, one of the cool trends in the electronic vehicle area, or cars where the frames and the chassis has a lot of the battery power. There's storage in the structural parts of the car, not just in batteries. So that's pretty interesting. Although I can't imagine, like, if your car is the frame and chassis are a lot of battery, what it costs to repair it if you're in a collision.
Or what if the whole battery catches fire? The whole frame around you is aflame.
Well, I don't think that's really a danger unless it's raining.
Rick, always fun chatting with you.
Likewise, Jim. I appreciate your inviting me on. Anybody who wants to try Rick's Picks for free 2 weeks, just go to rickackerman.com, and up top there's a nice subscription offer.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.